Blog Talk Radio.
We've got film. And we've got psychology. When we put the two together, we've got filmcology. Each week, we will look at the psychology of the characters in film, and it gives us something lovely to think about. So, let's get started. Filmcology is now.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Filmcology. Today is a movie that has just affected me on so many levels. But I hope you got a chance to watch it, whoever you are, if you're checking in by archives or you're calling in or accessing us by the internet, however it is, or podcast, however it is that you're accessing us today, I hope that you get a chance either or have gotten a chance or you will check it out after the show. It's most of us that are in just sort of our regular lives and working or doing stuff, most of us are probably, if you're on a computer or accessing a computer, you're probably in a lot better shape than some of the people on that are featured in this movie. But even if you do have a computer, you could very well be somebody who is associated with what's going on in this film. The movie is called A Place at the Table. And this movie is about hunger in America, which really, well, it's affecting more than 50 million Americans. And, well, it seems sort of antithetical to the America, you know, land of the free and plenty and all that. Well, the reality is that there's not a problem with food. There's no shortage of food in America. But there seems to be a problem with everyone being able to access food. Either the food is overpriced for the good food, the really good, wholesome, natural nutrients, or the ability to get assistance for food is regulated at a level that is completely inappropriate and unrealistic for what people need in terms of feeding their family. There are, let's see, some of the things that I'm going to go ahead and pop in some of the information about the film that I did talk about. For instance, there was a gentleman that was in the film. Now, mind you, the film is basically talking about this issue of hunger in America. They talk about the first time that people even became aware that there might be people starving in America, and that was back in the early 70s. And then they talked about the response, because CBS News, which used to be the best place to get news back in the 60s when I was a little girl, because you had the Walter Cronkites and the people like that, and the Morley Safers, who were, they were the kind of journalists that, when they brought the news to you, it wasn't because it was sensationalism. It was because, look, this is an issue we all need to deal with. Here's what's going on. They were also the kind of journalists that were able to say, to apologize when somehow the information that got to them was incorrect. So it was a time when we were still more able to trust the media to actually, or the journalists, excuse me, to actually be champions of human rights and information that we all needed to know. Today, I don't believe that's really the case. This is my opinion. But if hunger were more, I guess if it was the kind of subject matter that people enjoyed or found entertaining, then it might be on your mind like the Kardashians, you know, their butts, their marriages, their ridiculous lifestyles. And I don't know them. I'm saying ridiculous because to me, compared to hunger, it is ridiculous. It's ridiculous that we care more about that and what some celebrity is wearing, whether it's outrageous, ridiculous, new, or by who, than we care about little children that are hungry. For this movie to sympathize or just the solidarity that I felt a need to connect with, whether you agree with it or not. I have friends who didn't agree with it. I have friends who felt that I probably shouldn't have done it, and I respect their opinions. But I just felt this need to do a fast just so I could sort of connect with the fact of people having a hard time being able to eat every single day, you know, so that they're at least satisfied enough to not feel hungry. I mean, I'm not talking about somebody having a big feast. It's just there are people in America who don't know where their next meal is going to come from. And in the film, there was even a little girl who lived in Colorado. She lived in a very rural town. Her mother worked, got a job, which you know, we all, right, in America, the important thing is that you have a job. Well, once she got a job, then she was no longer eligible for assistance. So basically, her standard of living went down. And so her daughter and her had to, the little girl's mom and her had to move in with her parents. And her parents weren't doing so well because one of them was sick and he couldn't access as much. And so they're also having health issues, which, gee, takes a big, huge portion of the income of people. And this is before the Affordable Care Act went into place. Can't really say too much about how that's affecting everything, but I'm sure that it's affecting everything. Whoever you are, your health care, the fact that we have to pay so much for it basically means you have less money for the table. And that doesn't include the other things that you have to pay for, where you live and things like that. So here we are. We have this little girl who's so hungry. She talked about going to bed at night and her stomach hurting because she was so hungry. Now, it was such a problem that her teacher, and it's interesting the way they portrayed things in the film, you began to see how things were sort of interconnected. Her teacher also spoke in the film, and she thought that the little girl was just not applying herself, and she felt that she had a serious learning disability. The little girl, when they were talking to her, the little girl was saying that she often found it hard to concentrate because her stomach was hurting so much when she was in class, and she was really tired. And I'll relate experience. I shared an experience on my blog, jimsonberry.com, where when I was little, because we actually had we experienced poverty when I was a little girl, and my mom was a single mom. These are usually the hardest hit in America when it comes to finances. And there were four of us still at home. My oldest brother was off fighting in Vietnam or serving in Vietnam. And there were four of us at home. And things were really threadbare. So one night we didn't, there was nothing set out for dinner. There was no food. There was no dinner stuff in the refrigerator or the freezer. And my brother finally, after dinner time came and went, he finally approached my mom and asked what we were going to have for dinner. And my mom, who I later figured out was too ashamed to even face him and was frustrated with the situation herself, just said, without looking at him, maybe you should go without eating. You know, she said something like, maybe you should go without eating for a night or two. And we were hovering in the background, myself and my other two siblings, and we didn't even know how to react to that, because children don't really consider what's behind whether you're going to eat or not eat. Most children aren't that keyed into the financial situation of their parents. And my brother David didn't really know what to do. So it's not like he could have produced food that wasn't there. And I remember being really angry at my mom, and I thought she was really mean and evil, and I just thought she was the most horrible mother of all. And we did go to bed that night, and we had nothing to eat, and I was hungry, but it was just that knowledge that we didn't have dinner, and I didn't know when we were going to get something else to eat, and it scared me. So I was like 8 years old, and I was crying when I went to sleep, and I was terrified. And that was living in a house that my dad had gotten, but since they were divorced, things were shaky with that. But we were in a home that's the only home I'd ever known. So it's not like I was in quote unquote assisted housing or a shelter, where a lot of children in America today, I'll say a lot because I don't have the actual numbers, but there's a significant amount who are basically living off charity. And it's not easy. I know this from dealing with the homeless when I used to drive the Metro Transit buses, and from some of the United Way agencies that I spoke at. I used to volunteer, and when I worked at Bank of America, and I would go in and speak to different businesses and things like that about, just to drum up a little funding from people for agencies that serve children. And I did get to see a lot of children that were in assisted daycare, a lot of different agencies. And I couldn't deal with having a lifestyle where I didn't know where I was going to sleep every night, or I was sleeping in some weird room that wasn't, was, you know, all of us were in the same room, and it wasn't my own room, or, you know, there's a whole bunch of other people around all the time. So you have this real stressful situation. Even when in the film, as they highlighted, there was this one particular mother that from the beginning she was speaking about her situation. She didn't have a job. She was looking for work. She wanted to go to school to better her situation. But as she said in the film, I can't just go to school for 2 years and tell my children that, you know, you can wait 2 years to eat. She had to worry about what they were going to eat and their welfare now. And one of her children had a lot of behavioral problems, And there was a nurse in the film, or doctor in the film, that was explaining that children that are born to situations where there was a deficit in food and nutrition. So, for instance, the mother obviously didn't have as good nutrition when she was pregnant. And then when the baby was first born, probably the mom didn't have good enough nutrition, which her son also continued to have this sort of nutritional deficit. It's to, then he ends up with all these behavioral and physical problems. He's quick to emotional, is extremely anxiety-driven. And the doctor, you know, clearly stated, you know, this child is, his behavior is related to the fact that this woman has been compromised nutritionally. Her family continued to be compromised. We saw her at different parts of the film, and her responses to the different statuses of her in the film. For instance, she was able to get a job, and she was so excited to have a job. And her children are also thinking this is a good thing, although she still has a lot of the issues with the youngest, who had the problems about food. Then she ends up working for an agency that helps determine how much people would get in food stamps based on their income and their situation. And so she even said, they had a picture, you know, they were filming her on her job, explaining to somebody that how much they would get for their food stamps. She thought that it was great that she finally could actually help somebody else figure out how to get assistance for her, their family. When she started out in the film, she was told that she couldn't get food stamps because she was $2 over the limit, her income. And she was, I guess she was, I don't know what kind of income she was getting, but whatever it was $2 over. So she said, because $2 over, I couldn't even get $1 in food stamps for my children to eat. So her children relied on the daycare's breakfast and lunch, free breakfast and lunch programs. They were eligible at that time, and they were eligible for daycare, but they weren't eligible for food stamps. So then she gets the job. She's now not eligible for food stamps, and even worse, now she's not eligible for the daycare assistance, and her children are no longer eligible for the breakfast and lunch daycare. And one of the things she said at the beginning of the film is that she didn't want to ever feed her children Chef Boyardee. Nothing against Chef Boyardee. It's just, you know, this is in the film, so not trying to denigrate anyone's product. But she said that's all that they used to get when she was a child because they were so poor. And she couldn't stand the smell anymore, and just the whole thought of that being the only thing that her children would have to eat. And so we've now traversed to this woman, you know, being on assistance, getting a job. And now when we do see her, she's pulling out 2 cans of Chef Boyardee to feed her children. And she started crying. And her children, of course, didn't want that. Her children thought, one of the daughters said, well, we already ate. One of her children said, we already ate. And the woman asked what she had to eat. And she said, we had chips. And her daughter felt like that was a meal. And that's not going to sustain any child nutritionally. And although grains are good fiber, it's like to the fact that you have all these empty calories of things like grains, like that are chips that are processed foods. Basically, your children are getting no nutrition, so the body is hungry. So her meal was going to be Chef Boyardee. And so that was one of the transgressions that are in the film. One of the other transitions that are in the film that they help to explain is the connection of obesity. And one of the things one of the doctors was discussing is the fact that people often think that people are starving, or if they're really poor, that, you know, they're just going to be really thin and emaciated, malnourished people. But the reality is, as was evidenced by one of the mothers explaining about the foods that she fed her children. She was a single mom and had very little money, very little. So for the job that she had, she would get very little money. She had a couple of children, but one of her daughters, they were focusing on, who was obese for her age. She was only, I think she was only 6 years old, 6 or 7 years old, something like that. And the doctor had her weigh in, and she was asking her her age, and she asked what kinds of things, what did she have for dinner the night before, and she said she had some kind of processed food. And then for breakfast, she had something else that was really processed, like donuts or something like that. She had basically a diet of like donuts, chips, and ready-made meals that were really inexpensive. So as the doctor was explaining, oh, I'm sorry, there's someone else that's in for a call, and I apologize if I don't pop you in right away. I'll get to you. But one of the things that the doctor was saying, that basically because these children are getting nutrients, that non-nutrient processed foods, that their bodies were still hungry. So the children are getting a lot of empty calories. And then, of course, they're going to load up more on them because they're starving. And that mother explained, if I could afford fruit, she said, when it's on sale, then I'll buy fruit. But when it's not on sale, then I get whatever's the cheapest, so she can feed her kids. So, if you don't believe that there's hunger in America, then you're completely out of touch. And the people there at the political level, even the ones who tried to live on food stamps for a week, they couldn't do it. This one gentleman had his whole division try to live on food stamps for 1 week, and he said it just can't be done. And he said that they thought they were making the best choices they could make, which basically meant you didn't get fresh foods, you didn't get fruits and vegetables. Even the program, the WIC program, Women and Infants and Children, it's basically designed supposedly so that children, babies, and new mothers can eat more wholesome foods. And I remember when I was a grocery checker, and women would come through with their WIC coupons, and they were supposed to be able to get milk and eggs. They really wanted the kids to have milk. Debatable as whether that's the best thing for you. I use it, but okay. It's from a cow, you know, big dun cow. But that's another issue. And then the eggs. So what would happen is these mothers who were so poor that would come in. And, you know, there's a lot of things that come with people who are lower socioeconomically classed. You know, they tend to have a lot of behaviors that are not conducive to helping their situation. So most of the women would come through with the WIC. They would, at the end of the WIC, they would get, or food stamps, they would get change. And most of the change would come back in dollars. WIC would make us, I think we had to get down to $2 or less. They could get the change back in cash. And these women would come through with these things and use that money to go back and get cigarettes or something like that. I'm not lying. That's firsthand knowledge. And so I'm not saying that the people in this film are doing this, but I probably want to smoke too if I had a situation so dire. I'd probably want to drink because I don't even know how they could afford that. It's just their substance was so bad that they were doing all kinds of weird things to try to work out their lifestyle. Here in Washington State, just last night, they were talking about the fact that there are people getting food stamps with Social Security numbers from people that are dead. Now, what I am trying to say is this. There are children out there that are hungry and they're falling off of the grid, and yet the government, you know, they're real strict on making sure that their families don't get any food stamps if they're $2 over. And yet they're paying for somebody who's dead to people who are abusing the system. Seems like something's off kilter. And still what keeps bonging to me is the children are always the most compromised. When I stopped eating last Saturday, it was actually a couple of hours, about 3 hours before midnight, that I stopped eating and just to get in touch with the hunger. I was extremely hungry the first day. I was really hungry, and I wanted to eat, and I sort of whined to my friends and. But I made it through because I kept thinking about this film. Then the second day, I was just, I couldn't eat because my stomach was so crampy and knotted, and I felt sick. And I, you know, had a lot of intestinal bathroom problems. So, and as I was feeling sick, and when I was hungry the first day, I kept thinking, what the heck does a little kid do that feels that? And then I thought about the little girl who was doing so poorly in school because she was so hungry and going to bed at night hungry. The third day, I had a real emotional day. There was a lot of emotional things going on. And I didn't feel hungry. I felt inclined to eat because I was having a lot of emotional problems. So let's just think about the children who are in these situations. Their lives are already torn up and mercurial, and they're not always getting food on a regular basis. They don't always know where their next meal is coming from. You can't even begin to imagine the kind of stress that all this uncertainty has on a child. And yet, I could just open a refrigerator and I could get some food. I'm below the poverty line. I'm a graduate student, and all the money that I get pretty much goes to schooling aspects. But I have some backup that is not the government, which tells you something about how well our government is doing for us. But these children don't. And they couldn't just decide one day all of a sudden, I'm going to stop not eating and I'm just going to go ahead and make myself a salad. Something has to be done. It has been done before. In the 1970s, when the Morley Schaeffers and the Walter Cronkites presented the fact that there were children in America who were hungry, they weren't Africans starving in Africa. They were in our own country, and they were starving. And people were horrified in America, and they said something must be done, and it better be done now. And they literally solved the hunger problem. There was no more problem. And then what changed? I assume the political climate or the focus of the people of America. And this isn't a God save the children ad. This is reality. I'm not saying that's not reality, but this is about children in America. Your neighbors that you may not realize may not be getting good nutrition at all. I'm sure that our neighbors didn't know that we were going to bed hungry. I remember, as a matter of fact, I talked to my brother the other day because my mom finally, because our family was like, you don't do welfare. I come from an old-time Southern family. What you need, the family's going to provide for you. And if family doesn't provide for you, then you just don't need it or you're not doing something right. But listen, you better work it out because there's always someone watching. Your grandmother, your great-grandmother, your grandfather, your great-grandfather, other people in the family are watching. And if they start hearing that you're not taking care of stuff with the kids right, then somebody's going to step in from the family. But it wasn't the government. And here's one of the things that I will say about that. My family did bring us food the next day when I was so scared. And so I did get some food. But there was another moment later in our lives because single mom, my mom and we ended up being in poverty for many years. And finally, my mom actually, instead of getting food stamps, she somehow got some government foods. Back then, they had some government foods that they produced, like government chicken in a can, government powdered eggs, and there was something else that they used to, government cheese, which basically was a big giant block of like Velveeta. And we were accustomed to regular cheese when we had food, when our father was still, my parents were still married. So, you know, we're used to regular foods. And at first, when we looked at these foods, it all came in white packages with black lettering. There's nothing brand name about it. And we weren't going to eat it until there was nothing left in the house. And so my mom was working all the time, and we finally figured, well, we better try to make something out of it. And David and I were just talking about it the other day about how just we made those powdered eggs shine. Somehow we figured out a way to add just enough pepper or something so that it was good. And when you get to the point where you start eating something you just wouldn't eat, like the Chef Boyardee that this woman started giving her children, you're at the low point. You're really low. And it's like my friend, I'll let her speak here in a second, who explained, like, if it was me and it was my child, I would start doing things that I just would never in a million years want to do. And we discussed that. I discussed it with her, and I discussed it with my other friend, Nina, what I would do if I had a child and I couldn't feed her. So, like, if you ever see me knocking on your door and I have to eat all of my pride so that I could get my kid a peanut butter jelly sandwich, or I offer to do some unethical, horrible act with something, that's not because I'm a creepy person. It's because I'm desperate. And I think a lot of parents who start doing these horrible things are desperate. Lydia, did you want to say something? Lydia?
Yes, I had muted it because I'm cooking and it's loud. But yeah,
oh, okay.
No,
I did say that I would do anything I had to do because I couldn't see my children go through that. And I could feel in the movie, I could feel the desperation of that one young mother. And here she goes,
yeah.
And she gets a job, and she's just $2 over. And they wouldn't give her food stamps. And she didn't have the money to feed her kid. I can't imagine what that was like. It's abhorrent, and it's not right in this country. And people want to say, well, there's food banks and this and that, but they run low. I know someone that works at a food bank. He manages it. They run low. They have to give less to people at times. It's not like you can walk in there and, you can load up your bag with all kinds of food. That doesn't happen. Maybe there's more affluent places that, it can happen that way, but it doesn't always happen. And I live in Colorado, and there is a lot of affluence, but there's a lot of poor people, too, especially in the smaller eastern communities.
Yeah, and you brought up something about the rural part, like, where are the community gardens or something to help these people help themselves somewhat. I don't know if function of time or land management or what, but you would think.
Well,
I
think in the rural areas, I really think that there are people that I think that I would have to be an activist to say, let's pitch in together. But, we've created this separation society where we're in our homes and we're not talking to our neighbors and, we don't know them and we don't see, that maybe they might be hungry. This is the little girl seemed to be living in a pretty rural area. But I just wonder, I'd get together with neighbors and say, let's buy, a pig or some chickens or something. I don't know.
I think that has something to do with your educational level as well.
I mean,
when you consider the frame of logic that people tend to have when they're at lower socioeconomic status and higher socioeconomic status, there's a big chasm between their ways of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I think people who are at really lower socioeconomic statuses tend to be what we would determine as desperate. And I think desperation comes from not having better judgment skills on a way to work something out. I think
when your governmental leaders are saying things like you're lazy, if you're hungry, you're lazy, which is not the case.
That's just one. That was a presidential candidate. I mean, I'm sure there's just massive people throughout Congress who have those creepy feelings.
They say that.
And,
no, they say it consistently anymore, and it's like a war on poor people because then that we can't point the finger as like, hey, I know that our congressmen, our senators, they have a bank account where they can write a bad check. There's no limit to the bad checks they can write. They don't get any fines. They don't have to pay any penalties. And they can do this. And they don't pay
I worked at five banks, and I know that to be a truth. Now, if you had bounced a check and you're a regular person and it was 10 cents over, you would get dinged with a bounced check fee. But I worked at the bank that had Microsoft accounts, and their payroll accounts were almost always overdrawn by thousands and thousands of dollars. It could be up to a week before they dropped the money in there.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get a fee for that.
Right, right. It's just things are just stacked up lately really against the poor people, I feel, in a lot of ways. And, I hear, I was in Chicago and I heard a woman who is a very kind, good woman. She told me of this woman, in air quotes, that had 10 children and that the government built a house for her. And she was very angry about it. she told me, and she, you know, she doesn't know the woman, so it makes me suspect. Is this an urban myth or what? But she said that this woman had 10 children and that the government built her a house for her. And, you know, and she works really hard, and she was like, well, where's my house? And but feeling that way, but I'm not sure that it's true. And or one thought I had was, if it is true, maybe with 10 kids you really need a house, and it's cheaper than paying rent on an apartment building. I don't know, you know, but I hear stories from people, no way to check them out if they're true. You know, but they'll swear on, you know, their mother's grave that they heard that this, and this is true, and this person, you know, gets all this money and doesn't do anything, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there's this anger towards poor people, and I don't get it. I really don't get it. And so I think also in some, you know, I'm not educated. I didn't go to school. I don't have any degrees. I mean, I went through high school and took some college courses, but I just didn't have the need for it. And, you know, but it puts me, if it wasn't for my husband, I'd be in a low socioeconomic class because I can't make much.
Well, here's the thing. When I say educated, I don't mean that you necessarily have to go and get a college degree. There's a lot of people that are at the lower socioeconomic class that have barely, if they've made it through high school, and it has a lot to do with your ability to really understand what's going on around you, to connect with the knowledge that might help you and inform you of a better way. Part of the problem that goes with poverty is lower understanding and educational resources, because even now today they're making it harder and harder for you to become educated, especially if you are poor, because you either have to work all the time so you don't have time to take school or to go to school, or a lot of people had to drop out that were at lower incomes just to take care of their family, you know, especially if one of the parents died or became ill or was disabled either through drugs or alcohol or diabetes or some other kind of major issue. So you don't have to have a college degree to be educated. But
right.
If you're always sort of nutritionally disabled, or as there's a term that they use in this movie that's just tragic. It's called, I know the term. I heard it. It's not food. There's something to do with, like, food. Do you remember that term that they were using in the film?
I watched it, but I don't remember it. I it's on the tip of my tongue, too.
It'll come to me. I know that I had it in my blog, but you're basically compromised. You're nutritionally compromised because you aren't able to get the kind of foods that are actually helps your body, even your brain function. Your brain functioning is less than if all you're eating is empty calories and sugar-based, starch-based carbs. It just isn't going to work.
And the one woman, and that one woman who had the child, the younger boy, who was delayed, and she—that
was the same mom, the mom, single mom.
Yep.
Isn't that the one you're talking about?
I am. And she said she couldn't. She blamed it on her nutrition while pregnant, which is, you know,
right.
We all know a pregnant mom should be eating well.
Right. Exactly. There was a police officer in the film, and I think he was in Culleson, Colorado as well. And he said that he hasn't received a pay raise in 4 years. And what he used to spend on 1 month in groceries, it now gets him about 2 weeks. And, you know, he's just explaining, it's like we all have a stake in this, and we all are compromised. Jeff Bridges, he runs he's involved with the Hunger Organization, and in his organization is trying to, you know, work out how to stop this, you know, big leaking ship. And he was saying, he made this statement that I think is absolutely true. He said, it's about patriotism, really. He said, if another country was doing this to our kids, we would be at war. And it doesn't have to be that way. It just doesn't. We're doing to our children what we wouldn't let anyone else do.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to break in for a minute, Brenda, and give the phone number in case somebody wants to call in. The area code is 646, number 727-2914. Please call in and give us your opinion on this film or talk to me in the chat room.
Thank you, Nina.
Go ahead. You're welcome, honey.
So, yeah, we, listen, folks, I know it's probably like, you know, what can I do, you know, and I'm not suggesting everybody stop eating for a couple of days, as one of my friends said, I don't think that the people who are starving would think this is helping them. I don't believe that I was helping them. It was about me getting in touch with just that. Let me tell you, when I ended the fast, unconsciously, I was just really ready to do it. But the other thing is, I was making something that I was going to actually put in my refrigerator, and I was making a risotto. I know it sounds kind of like a fancy schmancy gourmet, whatever, but it's basically rice and some mushrooms and a little Parmesan cheese. But yeah, okay. And it's a starch. But it's a grain, and because as you come down from not eating, you have to be a little bit careful about what you eat, or you really have some major problems. And so I just wanted to make a grain. But one of the things that I was doing, even though I had decided I'm just going to continue, I went to check the rice and immediately put the spoon in my mouth, and it was like, oh, it's done. And it was this weird slip-off. But so it was over 3 days, but that's okay. You know, it was okay, and I felt okay with ending it. But I noticed immediately the next day, because I had about a half a cup of the grains, the next day I felt like a completely different person. Nina could tell you, I called Nina, and I said, well, you'd be happy to know I ended the fast, and I said, don't I sound different? She said, you sound happy and more chipper. And that even upsets me, because I just think about how a child would feel who's been getting crap for nutrition or no food, or that little girl who's going to bed hungry and does so bad in school. I mean, I wasn't doing really great in school. I wasn't working on my perspectives. You know, I was just like, my stomach feels sick, and it's sort of like, how to focus on that? How to focus on my assignments when I'm feeling that sick? And just a little bit, I was a little stressed. So then the next day, I mean, just naturally moving back into eating, and just how it made me feel, like everything was sort of okay, like I was okay. And emotionally I felt comforted. So I saw from both sides of it just the whole transition, and just how easily it would be to help relieve these children, their stress, and help their lives, just their lives. For them to know, okay, you're going to have food. You know, we're going to make sure that your parents have enough so that they can get decent food. The 50 million Americans that are living on charitable foods, they're not going to the food bank like, I've been to the food bank. I know a lot of people. No, I can't say most people I know. Quite honestly, I only know a few people who have actually been to the food bank, but I have driven people to the food bank. I've let them borrow my car to go to the food bank, and they would come back with a couple of bags of food, and I thought that was really great. But listen, I went to a food bank a couple times. I didn't use it every week. Americans, these 15 million that they have documented and probably have access to good food banks, they're living on food banks weekly. Now, you really need to think about that. And even if you're getting food stamps, that's probably what you would need so that you could prevent your children from being in such dire situations. There's people out there doing things, folks, like John Bon Jovi has something that I just... Okay, John Bon Jovi. I mean, I was not like the Bon Jovi... groupie kind of person. There was a few songs I liked by him, and yeah, I know everyone went on about his long hair, and then he got into acting, blah, blah, blah. But every time I hear anything about that man and charity, it's always such good stuff. And it's like, who knew that this little, teeny bopper fan, rock star was going to be such a great, great man, probably everyone in his life. But he has something called the Soul Kitchen Community Restaurant. It's the John Bon Jovi Soul Foundation. And basically, this is what the statement says, our vision here at Soul Kitchen is to serve healthy, delicious, and when possible, organic meals. At Soul Kitchen, you will notice there are no prices on the menu, and you might have been seated with someone you don't know. Customers pay the minimum donation or volunteer in some way to earn a dining certificate for a meal. And so, basically, if you are hungry and you even have your whole family and you need something to eat, you could walk into Soul Kitchen and you could probably volunteer another day to pay for the meal that you and your children would need, like a good meal. And they even try to do organic when possible. Now, the donation is like, well, here's sort of the minimum we'd like. But if you didn't have that, nobody's turning you out. How many restaurants do that? I mean, good restaurants. So there's ways you can help, probably if you just think about it in your life. And maybe the best way is to get the word out. You know, maybe it's a good idea to pop a few more cans in, you know, the mail bag when they come by and they say we're picking up food. The mail people actually pick up food here every once in a while for Northwest Harvest in the Pacific Northwest. And then they just take the food back and it all gets sent to the food banks. Maybe that's the best you can do. Or, like I said, maybe you should tell somebody about a place at the table. Or maybe just go see the movie and make the judgments for yourself. You know, volunteer at a soup kitchen. I know Lennis has done that. I've done that a lot. Most of the people I've known in Seattle have at some point gone to a soup kitchen on Thanksgiving or Christmas and volunteered their time to help serve people, the homeless. Or my sister, she's my sister and we do our, fights or whatever. We're sisters. My sister would actually, she isn't shouting it from the tops of buildings or anything or advertising on billboards. She just does this herself. She will make food. She will just make up a mess of grits and, maybe some eggs or some bacon, and then she'll go to this one parking lot of this church at 4 or 5 in the morning. And the homeless will come over And she brings her own plastic cups or whatever so that they, or bowls for them to eat. Sometimes she makes a bunch of cookies and brings out with oatmeal or something to drink. I mean, it's kind of funny because she's, my mom has gone to visit, and this, my sister lives in Georgia, and near Atlanta, and my mom went with her to help her hand out food, and my mom was just like, yeah, they just all come over, and they're just, they're getting all the food. Now, she's not using anybody else's service. She's doing this herself. I didn't even know she was doing that for all the time she was doing it. And on days that it's really cold, like it drops down to 30 or 40 degrees, Cheryl has actually gone out and got blankets and things and brought them out to them, and she would make big vats of soup or chili because she's just worried about them being so cold and hungry. And no matter how much my sister makes me crazy, somewhere in that heart, somebody is doing stuff like that for people who need, who are hungry and cold. I don't think we have to go join, you know, St. Vincent's, you know, crew for walking around, but I think if we all just stop and take one little second and figure out a way to help, we'll figure something out in our own little way. I'm sorry I talked the whole time, folks. If you had wanted to say something, I'm sorry for all my emotional things, but...
That's okay, Brenda. It's honest emotion, and it's how everybody else should be feeling as well. This is a very serious problem, not only in the U.S., but Canada as well. And it's time everybody got up off their butts and did something about this.
I know that Lennis had said something about what about the elderly and the disabled. Yeah, actually, I was looking at the food banks in my area, and they were saying that 51% of the people needing food banks are over 55 years old. So, well, it's not that I don't care about people over 55, absolutely not. It's just that there are developmental issues that go on with children, and when they're compromised, then you do have things like autism and diabetes and things that further compromise their health and the trajectory of their life. And we just, you know, I believe that, yeah, Hillary Clinton's right. It's a village that, you know, raises a child, and we're having problems. So, anyway, Place in the Sun, folks, please try to watch it. Please try to help out in any way you can. Maybe you just write a letter to Congress, your senators, your councilmen, and say, it's not working what you're doing for food stamps. They literally took money from food stamps to send money to the Move for Children situation to get children moving for obesity. And it's like, or to try to get more food programs in the school. How does that work when you're taking from the very people whose children are getting those same services? It didn't make any sense. Okay, that's it. We're going to go with the shows that are coming up, folks. Again, thank you for your... God, you are so patient with me. I bless you and I thank you. The next show that's coming up will be tomorrow, and that would be Traffic Jam Fridays at 5 p.m. And that's a special one. Nina, I can't remember what Lena said she was doing on that.
Don't put me on the spot because I don't remember either.
It's 80s and 90s. I remember.
Oh, that's right. Thank you.
80s and 90s music. And she's going to do a shout-out to Nina's grandchildren.
No, that's not next. No, that's not tomorrow. That's the following Friday. the 30th.
Okay, but this is 80s and 90s.
Thank you, Lydia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, it's definitely going to be music. It's about music. Oh.
Half
it's about
hour of
music
to get your weekend.
Yeah, that's right. And then so that'll be at 5 p.m. Pacific time, folks, with Lennis. Then on Saturday, we have Time to Love with Lydia Pello at 2 p.m. Pacific time, 3 p.m. Mountain, or over there in Alberta. Thank you, sweetie.
We're going to talk about relaxation, relaxing, and how that helps you to love yourself.
Oh, I could use a little relaxation right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good way to love yourself. And then Saturday is...
Sunday. In the studio with Lennis, and Lennis will be talking with me for a few minutes at the beginning of the show to wrap up the healthcare issue, and we'll be talking about healthcare here in Canada. And then she's going to be talking NFL and NBA
hockey
and all that other kind
that.
And the National Hockey League and all that kind of stuff. So she'll be wrapping that up and have some celebrity news for you as well. And that is at 3 p.m. Pacific time. And that brings us to Monday, where the three of us will be on L&B, Passage to Empowerment, and we are going to give everybody a little bit of personal insight into us. It should be interesting, and it should be kind of funny, I think, in some spots, too. Maybe a little bit serious at some point in time, but, yeah, we're going to try and keep her as light as we can. I know Lydia and Brenda have lived very colorful lives, so, yeah, we should have a few good stories happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, is that a racial comment?
I don't think so.
Just kidding, folks. I know, I'm bad. Okay, next Tuesday, we're going to have BYO Brilliance, and it is the brilliance of practicing kindness. Hey, it's a great follow-up to this show. Only much more upbeat, and so that'll be 6 p.m. on Tuesday. Then we're back to Wednesday.
And that's Psychic Readings with Lennis, and that is on at 6 p.m. Pacific time.
That's right.
Lennis has a special going on this month. Every ninth caller gets a free hour reading with Lennis, so phone in, folks. Lennis
you're going to be fighting me and Nina, because we're going to start calling in so that we can make it to the ninth, and, you know, we're going to... It's like that psychic reading is worth $60, and she's incredible if you get an hour with her. Imagine being able to ask whatever you want, find out about different things. It's really, or just even things about what, you know, she sees for your future, some of the things from your past life. There's all kinds of things that Lennis can do. So get in there. I mean, if you're in town, you know, maybe you'll even get to see her. I don't know. But anyway, so, try to call in there, folks. If you called first, call back a couple more times. Try to get to 9. Yeah, get that free hour. It's really worth it. It's amazing. I mean, I got a bugger to do that for me. Shoot. But, you know, anyway, moving along. That brings us back to next Thursday, which will be our last Filmcology of the month. And that show, well, since we're going to lighten things up a little, we're going to put on a little scary time. Got to have a little horror in there because Boo needs it. And that is The Haunting from 1963. It is a really stylized creeper. Holly, you should love this one.
But yeah, you're just trying to You're trying to scare me. That's all you're doing with
this
movie.
That movie, even though it was made in 1963, the year I was born, it is really sort of terrifying in spots. This is not CGI. This is really just good filmmaking. So you're going to want to go out and find it. You could probably find it online free somewhere. It's not the one, the House on the Haunted Hill, but it's an old house, yeah. But it had a history with some old guy that was sort of mean and a curmudgeon. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. You're going to want to see it, Holly. I'm talking to somebody in the chat room. But it's okay, see, Nina has it. It's really a good movie. And it's not the new version, which is crap, sorry. But the old version in 1963, very creepy, great movie. And it's in black and white. So it's going to turn all the lights out, watch it. And we'll talk about that and some of the psychological stuff going on there, because there is a lot of psychological stuff going in there. Okay. And that's cool. Pretty much it, folks. That was psychology.
Right.
And listen, I just got to say thank you for listening, and thank you for whatever you do to help other people that are compromised. And we all appreciate it. We're all in this together. Where do I end and you begin? Well, there really is no ending, and we're all in it together. So let's just all help each other to continue on with a better life. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everyone in the chat room, Melody and Lennis and Holly and Nina. Thank you for calling in, Lydia, and anyone else who's listening to the archives who accesses the show later. I really appreciate your support and whatever you can do to help with hunger. And thank you, John Bon Jovi, wherever you are, and everybody who, and Doc, you know, Mr. Bridges, everybody who's trying to help these people, you're awesome. You know, they're all our brothers and sisters, no matter what country you live in. Okay, everybody.
Exactly.
That's it. Everyone, take care.
It's a wrap.
Good night.
Later. Good night.
Good night.